from KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Wildfires have been burning near Yosemite National Park, as nearly 150,000 acres are already burned in one of the worst fires in the state's history. The Rim Fire, only 15% contained as of this morning, appears headed toward the Hetch Hetchy Reservoir, and two of the three hydroelectric power stations near Hetch Hetchy have shut down. This Forum segment, we want to update you on the Rim Fire, find out about its threat to neighboring communities as well as to the San Francisco water and power supply. We want to first off welcome Julie Hutchinson, who's battalion chief with CAL FIRE. She's in Riverside. And Chief Hutchinson, good to have you with us. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you.
Good morning. Give us the status of this fire. It's been pretty dry and rugged terrain that we're talking about here, and I know it's been quite a struggle, and the temperatures are rising. Where do we stand now?
We still stand with a lot of open area on this fire, and it's still a fire that is definitely out of control. Efforts are being made 24 hours a day to get more of that containment line in and prevent this fire from spreading into additional communities or into the national park and into those areas that are threatening that critical infrastructure, water, power, and roadways.
And you have thousands of firefighters, and I'm wondering, with all the cutbacks and sequestration, are you facing difficulties along that line of getting the personnel you need out there, the numbers?
You know, no, we're not. We luckily here in California have a very robust system for moving resources around, whether it be state CAL FIRE resources, the federal resources from the Forest Service, or our local government partners through our Master Mutual Aid Program. We really have a very robust system to do that, and I do know that the federal government is bringing in resources from outside the state as well, and we have that surge capacity to utilize our military assets, the National Guard with aircraft and things. So we're doing well. The difficulty really is there are areas on this fire you just cannot put people on the ground. They cannot access some of these areas because it's so remote and such steep, rugged terrain.
But this could turn depending on which way the wind blows, couldn't it?
Oh, without a doubt. That is the wild card in all this is the weather, and that's the one thing we can't control. But when you have a fire of this size that has this much open line around it, a wind shift in any direction can cause the fire to make runs in the direction that wind is pushing it. So we've got that challenge coupled with these very deep, steep river drainages that create their own wind as well and have their own wind patterns based on flow of the water and the flow of the river canyon that present challenges. So the weather is going to continue to give firefighters difficulties today. We're trying to prepare for that, get out ahead of it, have contingency plans, and have efforts underway to stop the fire from spreading into those areas that we're trying to keep it out of.
Again, we're talking to Battalion Chief Julie Hutchinson. She's Battalion Chief of CAL FIRE, and she's in Riverside this morning. Last night, Chief Hutchinson, I was actually aware of the fact that you had the fire is about 7% under control. This morning, it's more than doubled. We're at, I think, about 15% the last report I looked at. So there's been the fire crews have made significant progress yesterday and through the evening hours.
Boy, they're sure trying, and we did have the weather cooperate a little more overnight, and that did help us get that additional containment, even with the growth in acreage. So we're hopeful that today we can do the same, but we have to look around statewide. There's a lot of different weather systems coming in that are going to impact that Central Valley area where the fire is burning. So we've got to be heads up for that. We've got to be able to predict out ahead of what the weather's going to do, not only what it's doing now, but what it's going to do later, and get more of those lines in, get more of those resources into the areas where they can do the best good and be very efficient and stay on this 24 hours a day.
What can you say? Can you say something about the threat to surrounding communities, particularly like around Mariposa County in that area?
Sure. I do know there's some areas in Mariposa, but also in Tuolumne County, up in the Tuolumne City area and such. What we've done is set up some contingency plans. We've got resources staged and working in and around those communities in advance of the fire hitting there so that we know where homes are, which ones have done their defensible space, where we can make stands and also if we have to put any contingency lines around those communities to try and help push the fire around them should it come into the community.
And by the way, if you would like to join us, if you have questions or comments, you can do that now. Our toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786, talking about the fires that are raging, the rim fires over near Yosemite. And you can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or go right to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. And a question from a listener, actually, Chief Russell writes, what about someone who has a vacation plan to visit Yosemite in early September? Should they cancel their trip, and what will the air quality be like? I know now it's pretty open and relatively smoke-free, but any thoughts about that?
Yeah, definitely what I would do is get in touch with the National Park Service, monitor their site. Right now there is no impact to the Yosemite Valley area where most people are going to camp and visit. So I wouldn't have anybody just cancel their plans, but I'd stay aware of the situation and continue in contact with the Park Service to determine whether that will happen or not. A lot can change between now and then, and hopefully it's for the best that the fire gets contained and we don't have to have any further impact to our visitors.
All right, I want to bring in a couple of other voices in this discussion about the fires in the rim fire in Yosemite. Vivian Ho is a reporter with the San Francisco Chronicle, and she joins us also by phone this morning from San Francisco. Good morning, Vivian Ho.
Good morning.
I also want to say good morning to Harlan Kelly, who is General Manager of the San Francisco Public Utilities Commission, joining us also by phone. Harlan Kelly, welcome to the program. Glad to have you.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. And before I go to, well, actually, let me go to Vivian Ho first. Vivian, can you give us an update? You were essentially there yesterday?
I came back Saturday night.
Saturday night.
Last
yeah.
week. And, you know, this 15% containment is actually a really big deal. Throughout the week, it was a huge struggle just to get that containment number up because as they would, you know, maintain the containment line, it would just keep growing, making the percentage less. And so that 15%, it's a really big deal. They've worked really hard for that.
Well, let's talk about what they're doing. I mean, because they're bringing in a lot of aerial resources, including the DC-10s, and they're being utilized especially along the eastern edge. And at this point, again, I guess you'd confirm what Chief Hutchinson said. It's going to depend on the weather.
Yeah, you know, the whole thing that they've kept saying about the Rim Fire is that it's incredibly unpredictable. It's probably one of the more unpredictable wildfires of the time right now. You know, there's just no rhyme or reason. If you look at the map of how it grew, there's no rhyme or reason for how it grew. It looks like it's splattered. The analogy that was given to me was that it was like throwing a rock into a pond. You know, it started in the Klamath River Canyon. Someone threw a rock in the pond, and it just splattered, and it's just growing in all directions.
Well, it's growing, especially toward the east and the southeast, and it's resulted, we should mention, in an evacuation order and evacuation warnings yesterday. But what about the control lines for the southern perimeter? They've been constructed, and essentially firing operations will be conducted there over the next few days.
Oh, yeah, they've worked really hard, especially to protect the camps down there. You know, they would run back burns, which is burning the ground before the fire actually got there to get rid of all the fuel, the dry brush down there before the fire would get there and catch. Unfortunately, I just heard that Tuolumne Family Camp, which is south on the south line of that, was lost last night.
Yeah, we just saw that, and crews are continuing to construct fire line where accessibility and safety allows, but there are forest closures, there's road closures, and as I said, evacuations. And there's also the concern about Hetch Hetchy. Harlan Kelly, let me bring you into this discussion and get your sense of what's likely. And let me thank Vivian Ho for being with us, who, again, is a reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle and joined us by phone. Danger to Hetch Hetchy, danger to the water and power supply, Harlan Kelly?
Yes, we're very concerned about the fire as it approaches our Hetch Hetchy system. We're really concerned, and we're assisting CAL FIRE and doing what we can to help them. They're doing an amazing job out there, trying to deal with this unpredictable fire. As it relates to our water supply, I just wanted to make sure that I'm clear that we are able to deliver water and meet everyone's needs. We're concerned about the ash that will eventually enter into the system. You know, as you know, the fire produces ash, and it eventually works its way into the system. So we're concerned about that at this time. As far as power is concerned, two power plants are out of service. We de-energized the line, and we have one plant that is currently active.
Well, you're talking about those two of the three hydroelectric power stations. They're shut down now, aren't they?
Yeah, two of the three. And typically, to meet our municipal customers in San Francisco, we need about 160 megawatts of power, and one of the plant is only producing 50. So we have to go in the open market and use our bank, which we have with PG&E, to cover the 110 megawatts.
Well, at this point, again, everything's going to depend on how the temperatures rise or how the wind blows.
That's correct.
Yeah, well, let me bring our listeners into this again. You can join us if you have some questions or comments, and we do welcome your involvement in the program. We're talking about the Yosemite Rim fire, and we're talking, if you just joined us, with Harlan Kelly, who's with us by phone, General Manager of the San Francisco Public Utilities Commission, and Julie Hutchinson, who is Battalion Chief with CAL FIRE. You are welcome to join the program at our toll-free number, 866-733-6786, or via email. Our email address is forum@kqed.org, and you can also, of course, go to our website, kqed.org/forum. Click on this segment or tweet us, our Twitter handle, @KQED Forum. Chief Hutchinson, one of our listeners, Brian, writes, my understanding is that Yosemite Park has prompted letting natural fires burn and setting prescribed fires to a far greater extent and time period than the National Forest System has. I don't know if that's true for the particular part of Yosemite being affected, but is this different history likely to affect and maybe reduce damage from the fire inside the park?
Boy, I don't have any information specific to that. You know, I just know that we're all actively involved in containing this fire, and that's something we can look at in the future. I don't have specific knowledge of what has or has not gone on in that area. But again, I know all agencies are actively involved in extinguishing this fire and stopping its spread.
Well, just to give some sense of just how serious this fire is, it has now been documented as the 14th most serious fire in the state of California's history, and the Rim Fire continues to burn on the Stanislaus National Forest, on Yosemite National Park, Bureau of Land Management and State Responsibility land, and continues to be quite active, extremely active, along the eastern and northeastern edge into Yosemite National Park. Let me bring some more of our listeners in. We go to Dan in San Pablo. Dan, you're on.
Hello. I'm hearing more and more of these massive fires that burn hundreds of square miles. This is, I think, a relatively new phenomena, and it seems like the major weapon would be air tankers. But when I listen to the stories, I usually hear that there's one air tanker. Occasionally, I hear there's two. My question is, how come there isn't a fleet of a dozen air tankers that hit these fires fast early on and knock them down before they can gain this overwhelming momentum that can't be stopped?
Yeah. Chief Hutchinson?
Sure, that's a great question. CAL FIRE does have a fleet of air tankers that we have for response into the state responsibility area of California. We work with our federal partners who also have air tankers available, and that is our number one goal, is to get on fires quickly and stop them before they very large, like catch them in their initial attack phase. And there's many fires that have actually started within the last 2 weeks that you'll never hear about because that did happen. Those few rare ones that where they start, the fuel conditions and the weather conditions, they grow very rapidly, and that's what we're seeing, is these very large, devastating fires that will creep up when we have numerous fires going at the same time.
Harlan Kelly, if I go back to you, I don't want to cause unnecessary alarm, but you talked about the ash getting into the water supply and things. What's the worst-case scenario in terms of water and power for San Francisco?
So as far as the water side is concerned, we are currently bringing as much water from Hetch Hetchy to replenish our local reservoirs. So if we get a high turbidity, which is, you know, ash, we will have a large amount, about 6 months of supply at our local reservoirs. And if needed, we can filter our Hetchy water source. So from that standpoint, it will cost us a little more money to filter water that we typically wouldn't filter.
Okay, and a correction. I said 14th largest fire in state history. I guess that's gone up. It's now 13th. Let me bring in another caller. And Anthony, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a question. We're talking a lot about the safety concerns for humans that this fire has and other living species, living animals. But I was curious if there are long-term benefits that the forest could gain from a burn like this.
Mm. Some thoughts on that, Chief Hutchinson?
I was trying to give you a little bit. I'm not a forester, but there are benefits, obviously, to wildfires, and we've seen them across the history, across the land, having these fires. And what comes to mind for me is always Yellowstone from the 80s, and we all thought the park would be destroyed, and we have seen it. It didn't destroy. In fact, it's rejuvenated, and we're seeing a regrowth there. However, the more and more populated we become and the more infrastructure that is in place, water systems, power systems, roadways, those are things that are now at risk in areas where these fires used to go through. And now we obviously have the threat to the national park, which has some treasures that can never be replaced. So our goal is to try and protect that as best we can. And there are some of these areas where it will be a benefit, but we don't need them to be to this size and this magnitude, because it does impact so many of our critical infrastructure, as well as people, pets, and those values, resource values that are very important to the state of California.
And again, Julie Hutchinson is battalion chief with CAL FIRE. She's in Riverside. Chief, getting a lot of questions about specific areas. Can you perhaps field some of these? I mean, for example, listener named Madeline wants to know if the fire is going on or near the Modoc National Forest, and a lot of people wanting to know about Tuolumne and the Berkeley Family Camp, the Lair of the Bear, and about the Evergreen Lodge near Groveland, Hetch Hetchy.
Boy, I don't have specifics. I do know there was some devastation to the, you mentioned the Berkeley Camp. That the fire did go through that area yesterday. I have not got a full report of the damage, but I'm hearing that was significant. So a lot of those areas, and again, this is such a big fire. It's moving in a lot of different directions, and those are the efforts that are being made, is to keep it out of those areas. But again, it's very rural. There's a lot of different roads into these areas and some very steep, rugged terrain as we're dealing with that.
Yeah, there are reports, actually, that Berkeley family camp, that Lair of the Bear, and other family camps are gone, but we will try to confirm. And meanwhile, let's get another caller on. That's Kathy. Hi, you're on.
Oh, good morning.
Morning.
Yes, I just had a similar question to one of your other callers. We were actually swimming in Pine Mountain Lake with our UK visitors. We were staying at a friend's house when the fire started, and we took a couple of photographs of it and videos. And it was really very small, didn't look like much at all on the Saturday. But whilst we were watching the fire, at Pine Mountain Lake, we were quite a way away from it, I'm assuming, but we didn't really see many air tankers. Can you tell me how many air tankers they actually used on the fire on the Saturday? Because on the Sunday, it appeared to be out. And then Sunday afternoon, we were back at the lake, and it started again.
So back to the question about air tankers. Chief Hutchinson?
Yeah, I'll be honest, CAL FIRE did not get into Unified Command until several days later, so that's a question best for the Forest Service and those initial responders. So I do not know exactly what resources were assigned on the initial few days of the fire.
Kathy, thank you
for
the
call.
Sorry,
I wish I could help you more.
Yeah, well, we'll maybe hear from somebody in the Forest Service who can enlighten us before this segment is over, but we haven't been able to reach them, at least at this point. Alana writes, when this is all over, I imagine rain and snow and winter and the loss of trees and root systems will make new small rivers and things like landslides. What will this area be like over the next few years? Again, that's more of a question for the Forest Service, but one has to look, I suppose, at the positive side and hope for the best, and at this point, that's what we're doing. Chuck writes, Tom Steinstra, the San Francisco Chronicle Outdoors columnist, reported today that Forest Service tanker planes were late on the scene, allowing the fire to gain much more momentum. Chief Hutchinson?
Yeah, again, not being involved in the initial days, I don't have that information. I'm happy to get with somebody in the Forest Service and see if I can get them to you to maybe help with another segment, and I'm sure they'd be happy to provide that information. I can tell you that California has been under the last few weeks, just an extreme amount of fire activity with the lightning siege that went through, and that all agencies have been, possibly getting on these fires as they happen, but we'll need to get with them to get the specific information.
Well, we have Gabrielle Fistar on the line with us. She's a scientist at the National Center for Atmospheric Research in Boulder, and she's a scientist at the National Center for Atmospheric Research there in Boulder, Colorado. And thank you for joining us, Gabrielle Fistar. Good to have you on Forum this morning. Welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, we'd like to have you particularly to find out about smoke damage. What can you tell us that we need to know with a fire of this kind of huge conflagration?
Well, this is a really, really huge and very intense fire. And basically, like any wildfire or any emission source, it releases a lot of bad pollutants into the atmosphere that we have to be very careful as humans because they can impact our human health. And we are talking specifically in the case of wildfires, we are talking a lot of particulates, so little particles that are in the atmosphere, and you see that. I mean, we see the smoke, we see these particles in the air, and we also smell them. So you smell that wood burn, et cetera, et cetera. And these particles, specifically, the smaller they are, the more harmful they are to us because we breathe them in, and they can go all the way into our lungs, and if they are very, very tiny, they can go into our bloodstreams. So they can really cause a lot of damage to our respiratory systems, but they also can cause cardiovascular diseases.
So what are your recommendations in the light of what you just told us? I mean, particularly for people who are near this area or going near this area.
I really strongly recommend staying indoors if possible and closing windows, running air filters. You know, if needed, run your air conditioner to clean the air. And if you have to be outdoors, try to limit really basically how much you are breathing. So don't go out and run. Don't go out and exercise heavily, but try to really limit the outdoor activities as much as possible, not just because of particles, but also because of other pollutants like nitrogen oxides, ozone, etc.
And what's the timeline for that kind of concern that you're expressing?
You know, this will be around definitely while the fire is around. It can linger. Specifically, ozone is a secondary product, will linger around for longer also after the fire. And you also want to be aware that it can be transported very far away from the fire. So even, you know, if you are 100 miles away from the fire, you might still have some impact on the air quality from such a big fire.
Well, I appreciate very much your being with us. Again, that's Gabrielle Fistar, who is a scientist at the National Center for Atmospheric Research in Boulder, Colorado. Tom writes, I spent a lot of time in Truckee, and the factors behind the current American and Rim fires has come up as a topic of community and neighborly discussion. From what, and I'll address this to you, if I may, Julie Hutchinson, from what you know, he wants to know, or from what you understand, facts, not speculation. Can you help us learn about how and which human factors played a role in the current fires? Do you know if and how human activity, fire suppression, development, et cetera, continue to contribute to unnatural forest density and overgrown forests in the specific areas of these two fires?
Boy, I don't, because I don't have the specific history for both of those. I know as far as causes, we don't have the cause on all these fires, which is still being looked into. And obviously,
weren't they speculating that all that lightning and those electrical storms had a good deal to do possibly at first?
Well, there are some that are that way, but obviously we still have to investigate each fire and verify that. We don't want to just assume it was if it has potential to be something else. So we're still going to go through that normal process of doing a thorough investigation on each fire. And that takes, obviously, and there's a lot of things going on. And then we can sit and take some time after and assess, you know, past practices, what's happened, what hasn't. We are continuing to see where defensible space and those critical fire prevention efforts being done not only around private homes but around communities, and infrastructure is really making a difference, allowing firefighters not only a place to make a stand but also protecting and giving those homes and values a better chance of survivability. So those fire prevention efforts continue to show us, regardless of where they're at, the benefits.
Well, the same listener, Tom, says, what are human factors, if any, may have contributed to these two fires? What other questions should we be asking and discussing?
Well, you know, I think we're going to have to look, when these get contained, look at the areas. I think that when you bring up the American and Rim specifically, those are both very steep river drainages. And I don't know that human factors, I think the biggest key factors are the environmental factors, that it has been such a dry year. We're on several years of dry. Lack of rainfall, lack of moisture has contributed to these areas that normally are not this dry, are very receptive to fire now. And when you get these weather systems come through and you get these increased winds, the higher temperatures, and fires get started, it gives them a lot more growth potential, and they're difficult to get to when they're in these very steep river drainages.
And let me make a correction. The Tuolumne Berkeley Camp was reported to have burned, not the Lair of the Bear. And let me bring another caller on, and that's you, Sean. Good morning.
Hi, yes. I just wanted to put a thought out there. I'm not sure who can comment about using scheduled fire burns as forest management practices to avoid bigger, larger catastrophic fires.
Well, to some extent, that's been, Chief, hasn't it, part of the whole philosophy of burns?
Well, and it depends, because I don't want to speak for the Forest Service or the National Park Service and their choices. I know for CAL FIRE, that is one of the methods we can often use or will use if it's the appropriate method, as well as manual thinning. We also have some herbicide type treatments that we can do those fuels treatment projects. Around communities, around homes, and that's for the CAL FIRE, the state land, the public and private lands within the state area. We'd have to get with the Forest Service and the Park Service on what their methods are. But for us, we know that has been a very effective tool if used appropriately and is assessed to be the appropriate need for that specific area, that specific terrain, and that specific wildfire threat.
And let me go to a question from a listener named Brian to you, Harlan Kelly. Brian says the circumstances around the fire as related to the power supply to San Francisco illustrate the importance of decentralized local power generation. Of the 150 megawatts of use, how much could solar panels in most rooftops in San Francisco produce?
So one of the things that we are looking at is looking at for our customers, our municipal customers, is to put solar panels on our facilities, and so that you don't have to depend on a distribution of power. And so that is something that we're looking into local build out.
Okay, we're coming near the end and we have some information. Jeff, real quickly, you have information on the Rim Fire. You were with the Forest Service?
Yeah, I was up actually backpacking, and a Forest Service manager was there from the U.S. Forest Service, and he was actually from Atlanta, so the U.S. Forest Service has pulled all the resources they have, and he said they are currently at alert level 5, which is the top. That's never happened before.
Okay, we're out of time. Thank you, Jeff, and thank you, listeners, and thank you to all our guests. Another hour ahead, we're going to talk about, in the hour ahead, the so-called empty nest when we return on Forum. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.